Yo, have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? When I was trying to get this podcast off the ground, I had a lot of questions. How do I record an episode? How do I get my show onto all the apps that people like to listen to? How do you make money? The answer was pretty simple for me. I started using Anchor. Anchor is a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing your podcast. And best of all, it's 100% free and super easy to use. And now, Anchor can match you with great sponsors who want to advertise in your podcast. So that means you can get paid immediately, like right away. In fact, that's what I'm doing right now by reading you this ad. It's super simple. So if you always wanted to start a podcast, let's start now. Go to anchor.fm/start to join me and the diverse community of producers using Anchor. Again, that's anchor.fm/start. See you soon.
Yeah, their bench is horrible too. I was looking at like who was our backup for, and I couldn't find anybody. It's like Henry Ellenson, that's it.
Yeah. That sounds about right.
He's going into his third year, and he hasn't even played that much.
Who did they? Oh, they had Tolliver last year. That's why. Oh, John Luer, my guy.
He's injured, though.
Not anymore.
Yeah, he is. Still hurt? Yeah, he had another knee surgery, like, last week.
Fuck.
Yeah, man.
My guy.
See how long he's out for, actually. Type that in right now.
I love John Luer. Hold on.
I think he had, like, an ACL surgery or something.
Stupid dog wants to sit on my lap.
Get him on the pod.
Didn't you hear him barking last time?
What, last pod?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, he was barking.
I missed it.
Injury. Roto World. Yeah, I expect to be ready for the season opener. Alright, let's get this bad boy started. What's up, everyone, and welcome back to the Stretch 4 podcast. I'm your host, Peter Tran, and on the line coming out of Barthaven, I got my main man, Josh Cohen.
Hello again.
And we're going to keep it rolling with these division previews. Today we're going to hit up the Central Division. It's, you know, a little bit of a loss compared to last year, but we'll make it enjoyable. We're going to start off in the Windy City, Chicago Bulls. Drafted Wendell Carter Jr., signed Jabari Parker to a 2-year, $40 million with a second year as a team option, matched Zach LaVine's offer sheet from the Kings, so he got hella paid this summer.
I mean, I like a lot of the talent individually on this team, but I don't really see how the pieces work going into next season. Now they're just building up their roster in terms of building up the younger core with, you know, LaVine, Parker, Markkanen, Dunn. And they're not done building, obviously, but in terms of this team itself, like, I just don't see how the parts fit, especially in the starting lineup, if you're going to start Dunn, LaVine, Parker, Markkanen, and Lopez. But even if you don't start Lopez and you start Markkanen at the five, you just have too many guys that are just looking to get their own, I think, in this team.
Do you think Jabari starts?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, with him signing for $20 million a year, he's expecting to come in to start on this team. I think that's not even a question.
So you're going to have Jabari and Markkanen starting for sure. So who's Lopez off the bench, and who do you have as the three? Holiday?
I think Lopez is going to start again. I don't think they want to put Markkanen at the five right away.
No way they run a three-man, like, 6'10" up lineup.
Well, Jabari's not 6'10". Jabari's like 6'7", 6'8".
What? Is he that small?
Yeah.
Oh, he's 6'8". Okay. So 6'8", Jabari at the three?
Yeah, I mean, his natural position probably is the four. Yeah. But just based on this team and how it's constructed, I think if you take Lopez out of the starting lineup, unless they're going, like, you know, full young guys and just starting Carter Jr. at the five, I don't really see who else they'd be playing with these guys. Maybe Justin Holiday, possibly, but again, if you do that, then you have Jabari Parker at the four and Markkanen at the five, two guys that are not really known as being great rebounders, so you're going to get absolutely destroyed on the boards, and plus these guys are not great defenders either, so you're just throwing them to the wolves at that point, right?
They would have like the worst defense ever.
So I think you need a guy like Lopez to start to at least bring, you know, some function of a guy that knows what to do with the five and being able to box out and rebound and provide good veteran leadership at least.
This is ringing a lot of Orlando Magic bells from last year playing Aaron Gordon at the three. I don't like that fit at all. Like, Jabari is not mobile enough to be a three, nor is he a good enough shooter.
Yeah, I think before the surgeries, I think he showed a lot in terms of his three-point shot. But since he came back last year, his shooting has been on and off, obviously. And I think, again, his natural position is at the four. So I think their best lineup will be with Markkanen and Parker starting together at the four and the five. But again, they're going to get slaughtered on defense. But it depends which direction Chicago wants to go as well, right? If they want to try to win games, I think they're going to start Lopez. And if not, if they just want to go with the youth movement, then they might as well to start Wendell Carter Jr. and go five young guys in the starting lineup and just see how many points they can score.
Yeah, I think they're going to try to run up the score no matter what.
Yeah.
Like, this team has to average at least like 100, 110 points a game to have any chance of winning or even staying competitive in their games.
Yeah, and again, the problem with that is, you have too many guys that just are looking to get their own. That's how they get their offense, right? Like, you don't really have a lot of spot-up guys in this team. Like, Markkanen's a guy that can spot up, obviously. And Levine has shown the propensity to, you know, sometimes be able to spot up, but he's more of a guy that likes to take it off the dribble. And Dunn's not a shooter at all. And Jabari is more of a slasher and a guy that likes to have the ball in his hands. So you have a lot of mismatched parts, I think, and they're going to have to get creative with the lineups to only have maybe three of those guys in the lineup at a time and try to have two guys that share the responsibilities of handling the ball more often than the other guys.
Yeah. You know what's crazy about this team? They have two guys that were not born in the 90s. So two guys born in the 80s. Do you know who they are?
In the 80s?
Yeah.
Lopez?
Yep.
And... It's not Holiday.
No. Oh, wait. Three. So, Holiday was born in the 80s. That's my bad. Yeah. So three guys. One more, though.
I'm trying to think of one of the scrubs they have on their team.
He might be the biggest of scrubs on their team.
Well, I think Cameron Payne's up there for scrub title. So outside of him. Rude. I don't know.
Omer Asik.
Oh, yes, yes.
Remember that name?
Yes, living the life.
4 years ago and is just milking it.
Yeah, he's got the greatest job in the NBA right now, making $12 million, married to a supermodel, just chilling on the bench, getting to travel for free for, you know, $12 million a year. It's great.
Gets personal trainers, nutritionists, everything he wants just to sit on the bench to chill.
Yep, doesn't have to play a minute.
Like, it's so bad that Cristiano Felicio might be ahead of him on the rotation.
And he's only ahead of him in the rotation because they're paying him $7 million a year to do nothing.
Oh, my God. Yeah, this Chicago team they're going to be really fun to watch. They're not going to be...
Are they, though? Are they?
Yeah, man. Yo, Zach LaVine, Carter Jr., Chris Dunn is actually really fun to watch.
Again, they're fun to watch individually, but I think if their chemistry isn't there, like, they might just end up scoring like 90 points a game because they just don't share the ball, right?
Yeah, that's also fun to watch, though. Let's be real. Watching Chuckers is hilarious.
It is, but at the same time, if they're going like 3-for-17 every game, it may not be as fun to watch.
But I don't know. I think it's going to be one of those teams where you're just expecting them to hit their next shot. Like, every time I watch Zach LaVine, I know he's not an efficient shooter, but I always just think his shots are going to drop.
It's a situation where, like, I don't think I would have re-signed him if I was them.
But what are you going to do? You can't just let him walk. You literally traded Jimmy Butler for this guy.
Jimmy Butler for Markkanen too, right? So at least you have him.
Yeah, that's true. I guess, but I don't know. They were never going to let LaVine walk.
I guess, but for that kind of money, like, I really don't think he's a starting caliber player.
But they're not going to sign anyone without money anyways.
No, but you're not going to be good in regardless, so why tie up your money to a guy that may not end up being a starting caliber two-guard? I mean, he's actually got a pretty good shot. Like, his shooting has improved, but he doesn't take good shots. So if he committed to taking more efficient shots, I think that he could become a, you know, starting caliber player. And if he committed to defense, obviously, too, that's like his biggest weakness. But it's I think at $20 million. Yeah. Like,
why wouldn't you pay this guy for the next 4 years? Because your whole team is young. You're not going to attract any free agents because no one wants to play with a bunch of young guys. So why not just take the risk? It can't hurt. You pay him for two more years. In his third and fourth year, that's when his contract is the most attractive to other teams. And that's when you can look at moving him if you need to.
Yeah, I suppose. But honestly, I would just try to build this team around Markkanen. I think he is that good. I think that he should be like the clear-cut number one option. And I think, and you know, having all these chuckers around him, it may just hurt, end up hurting his game.
But you love the Jabari Parker signing.
No, Jabari I like. I think taking a shot on him for $20 million for 1 year is really smart. And if he works out, they can exercise a team option and keep him for another year. And I've always been a fan of his game. So I think him and Markkanen offensively could definitely work, but defensively...
What? How can you see that those two working?
Well, they're different kind of games, right? Markkanen can do pretty much everything on the floor. Like, he's a really good spot-up shooter. He can, you know, get by guys on the perimeter if he's playing at the five. I think with those two at the four and the five, I think it could work. But if they're playing the three and the four, then it's a bit different. And I think, you know, the spacing becomes more crammed if you have a guy like Lopez starting.
That's true. With the starting lineup that we just projected, they're going to be interfering with each other a lot. Like, I don't like that lineup at all. I think you have to move Markkanen to the five and just play Parker at the four. And sort of just deal with the rest of it. Right? Like, I think by drafting Carter Jr., I think they're sort of just assuming that Parker won't be that good this year. Right? And just like assuming that he'll just walk next year, or that they can cut him because he just won't live up to the contract.
I don't think that's necessarily true. I think they drafted Carter Jr. just because he is a guy that can provide a lot of the stuff that Markkanen hasn't shown yet, in that he could be the next big who can hit threes, defend the rim, and be able to switch on guys on the perimeter and slow down, you know, guards, and being able to have a, you know, switch heavy defense. So I think if you have, you know, Markkanen with him being able to, you know, hide a lot of his deficiencies, I think that those two could be the front court of the future. And, you know, if Parker doesn't work out, then at least you have those two guys starting in the future. But if he does work out, then you have three really quality, you know, guys in the front court.
Yeah, I guess that's true. And Lopez is only on for this next year anyway, so they'll be off his contract sooner than later.
Yeah, and I like Lopez. I think that he can easily play 20, 25 minutes a game for most teams and be a quality player.
Yeah.
And I think that he's going to be able to provide, you know, good veteran leadership for a guy like Wendell Carter Jr. And I think that he had a good influence on Markkanen last year.
Yeah, hopefully the Bulls don't tell Markkanen to stay out of the city, because that's what they did last year when they were tanking. So, yeah, stay in Sacramento. Your girlfriend just gave birth like 3 days ago. Yeah, just stay there. It's fine. We're good. We don't need you here. You're really our best player.
And honestly, with this lineup, it wouldn't surprise me if they ended up doing that again this year and trying to tank in the second part of the year. There's so many teams in the East that look like they're going to be tanking. So even though this team has, you know, some upside with their talent level, the starting lineup especially, like, their bench is not the greatest. And their overall, you know, proven talent level is not the greatest either. So
yeah. All right, so their over-under is 29.5. What do you got?
I'm taking the under for sure. I think that they'll win 26, 27 games, I would say.
Yeah, I'd say around, yeah, like 25, 26. What was their, do you remember how many wins they had last year?
Not off the top of my head, no. I would guess probably around 24 games.
Oh, last year they had 27.
Mm.
Wow, that is surprising. Maybe they won't be an under. Does that change your mind a bit?
I still think the parts are a bit disjointed. So I think they can beat, like, I think on any given night, they could beat pretty much anybody just based on the offensive talent that they have if they get hot. But again, like, their defense is going to be one of, if not the worst in the NBA with all these young guys playing together and guys who just don't play in defense like LaVine. And
stop hating on the guy, man. Jeez.
I think that his career trajectory is going to be a lot like Jamal Crawford's, where he scores a lot of points early in his career, but his role is, I think, is going to be slated for like a six-man type.
But we all do love Jamal Crawford, so I wouldn't be opposed to it.
No, I mean, if he just accepts that role and that's who he is, then great, but I'm not sure if you want to pay a guy like that for $20 million a year. But they won 27 games last year with less talent. I don't know. Maybe I should take the over.
Yeah.
This is tough.
It is a tough one. Now that I've thought about it a bit more, I think Vegas has it right at like 29.
Yeah, so, I'm gonna go with a slight over. I'm gonna go with the I'm gonna go with like 30 wins.
Yeah, I'm going slight under at 29. Let's move on over to the Cleveland Cavaliers. I don't think they did much this summer.
Yeah, they only lost the best player in the world. No big deal. Yeah,
they only lost the best player in the world. They re-signed their best remaining player. to a huge contract for 4 years, and they drafted Colin Sexton. That's not so bad, that's not much.
Well, the one guy that's still outstanding is Rodney Hood, which is sort of odd at, well, I guess no teams are making offers because there's no money left out in the market. So he's either going to have to accept a qualifying offer or he's not going to play next year.
What's his qualifying offer? Is it like 5 or 7 or something? Do you remember?
I think he got drafted in the 20s. So it's probably not all too much. It's probably like under $5
million. Dang.
That's but after that, he becomes unrestricted. So on a team like this where he's going to get a lot of opportunity, he could end up making a lot more money than he would have, you know, this offseason, obviously, where there is no money left.
Yeah, that's true. So obviously the major... Oh, I forgot. They got Sam Decker, too.
That's huge.
Massive.
And so, Channing Frye. Don't forget Channing Frye.
Oh, he came home. Yeah.
One guy I actually liked who they signed was David Nwaba. He went under the radar, but he seems like a guy that could turn into a pretty good 3-and-D wing, and he showed a lot of improvement last year with the Bulls. He played like 25-30 minutes a game in like the second part of the year, and he plays pretty good defense, and his shot has improved a little bit. It's not where it should be, obviously, but he plays really hard. He plays tough, and I think he's going to be a rotation guy in the next 5 or 10 years for some team.
Yeah, if they had him with LeBron, he would have been really good.
But, yeah, you just need that guy that can, you know, defend wings on the perimeter and every once in a while hit a shot. But he has a long way to go in terms of, you know, being a quality perimeter player on offense anyway.
Yeah, he could have been like a equivalent to like J.R. Smith last year because J.R. was pretty bad.
Yeah, and honestly, like I hated on Cleveland the last couple podcasts. I think that this team is the team that teams are going to poach players from at the trade deadline. They're going to get, you know, guys like Korver and, you know, J.R. Smith is not a great candidate, obviously, but he could help a team if he plays 10, 15 minutes a game with his shooting.
Yeah.
So I think that those couple guys, Nance is another guy that could get traded as well if they don't want to pay him. Channing Frye is a guy that could help some teams possibly. So I think that there's a lot of guys, George Hill too. So there's a lot of guys in this team that I think are going to get traded at the trade deadline after they see that they don't have a lot of talent.
The issue would be their contracts, right? Like, JR is making 14.7 for another, like, this year and the next year.
Oh, he has 2 years left. Okay, never mind then. I thought he just had 1 year left.
What's George Hill got? Is George Hill up this year?
No, George Hill signed for, I think, 4 years.
Yeah, so he's got 2 years left. Yeah, so, like, moving those guys would be really difficult, but moving a guy like Korver, who's only making $7 million a year, easy. Nance, 2.2, easy. Like, those are the contracts that you can get rid of.
Yeah, for sure.
Issue at all. But the core of this team is still going to remain the same, I think. I don't see Smith going anywhere. I don't see them being able to offload Hill or Tristan Thompson or even Jordan Clarkson. Like, I think they're all stuck.
And Jordan Clarkson got re-signed last year, right? Didn't he get a big contract?
Yeah, he's making 12 and a half.
That's crazy.
Yeah, he should be making like 8.
And that's for a guy that's probably going to be a third stringer to start the year, right? Because you want to play Sexton at the backup, you know, guard position. So I don't see how Clarkson's going to get a lot of minutes unless he plays a backup 2, which in that case, you're setting him up for disaster.
Which in that case, good luck to your offense.
No, I mean, going back to the last podcast, too, with you guys saying that this team is going to make the playoffs, after looking at their roster, do you still think that?
I still think that they can make the 8th seed. I think Kevin Love is really good. He's been very underrated for the past, what was it, like 4 years in Cleveland so far?
Yeah, but yeah, at the same time, he's not prime Kevin Love anymore. Even if he is, this team doesn't have as much talent as the Timberwolves had back then. They only won 41 games in their peak season, too.
Yeah, but that was in a harder Western Conference.
It was, but this team doesn't have a lot of talent.
No, I still think that he can do the job, though. I don't know, I like Kevin Love a lot. I'm a firm believer in the guy. He's 30 years old right now, so literally in the prime of his career. I think he can carry them to an 8 seed. He can easily carry them over their over-under. Their over-under is 30.5. I think they're going over.
I disagree. I think they're going hard under.
Damn.
They have so many guys on this team that are injury-prone, including Kevin Love. And then you have Tristan Thompson, who you don't really know which direction that his career is going to go in now that LeBron's not there. where he's able to, you know, easily get these offensive rebounds because LeBron's getting double teamed all the time. So I'm not a believer in almost any of these guys. The only guys that I like on this team are Chetty Osman, who's probably going to start this year.
He's good.
Yeah, he's a good player. Like, he's going to play probably 30 minutes a game on this team at the three. But you have guys like, you know, George Hill and J.R. Smith that are starting for this team. That has to be one of the worst starting backcourts in the NBA this year. And two guys that just can't be counted on injury-wise either.
Oh, my God. Would you rather have their backcourt to start or Orlando's?
Like, probably Orlando's.
I'd probably take Orlando.
Fournier's a better player than both those guys, so I'd probably take Orlando.
I'd say they're equivalent.
No. I mean, George Hill, especially last year, like, his game fell off. I mean, he was a really good player on Utah, and then he had those toe injuries, and ever since then, his game just hasn't looked good.
Dude, you're just hating, man.
This team is not good. Like,
how many wins do you have them at?
I think they're totally going to bottom out, and they're going to trade a bunch of these guys at the deadline. They're going to keep Kevin Love out of the lineup for 3 months because they want to tank. I think that once LeBron leaves the team, that team just goes into pure tank mode. This team's not exception. Well, Miami's they didn't, but they got a bunch of mid-level guys to stay afloat, I guess. But this team has not. This team has a bunch of, like, veteran guys that just aren't good anymore, and a bunch of veteran guys that just can't stand the court either. So I just don't see enough, you know, in terms of supporting cast, supporting roles, to be able to help Kevin Love. I think Love's going to put up a, you know, pretty good season. He's probably going to average like 24-12 or whatever. But who's their secondary ball handler? Who's their second option on this team?
Jordan Clarkson. Hello. Yeah, you're selling me on them being garbage. I know they're garbage. I just like Kevin Love.
I like Kevin Love too, and I actually hope that he gets traded this season too to a team that can use him and be a secondary option where he'd really flourish. I think on a team like Portland, if he was able to get traded, you know, for a guy like Aminu and a few other parts and play with McCollum and Lillard, that team could be pretty scary in the West.
Yeah, that'd be amazing. So how many wins do you have them at? You said hard under. How hard are you going?
I think with the combination of injuries, lack of talent, and them probably deciding to tank later on in the year, I could see them winning 22 games.
Damn. 22. I had them at like 32.
If everyone stays healthy and it clicks and it works, and they're able to get minutes for Sexton too, which I think that's the one thing, like, if you're playing him big minutes, I think it's a guarantee they're going to go under because rookie point guards are not good. But if they don't play him as many minutes, which is not going to be good for his development, and they decide to try to make the playoffs, and they could win 33, 34 games maybe if everyone stays healthy. But I just don't see the talent on this team.
Let's go, Cleveland. All right, let's move on. To Detroit basketball.
I think the best thing about their team is actually Mason.
Oh, Mason's a legend. Mason is a legend. What did they do this offseason? They got Dwayne Casey, obviously, who was the coach of the year last year. They got Zaza Pachulia on a 1 year. Hooray. And they signed Glenn Robinson to a 2-year, $8.3 million contract. I see this.
I actually like that deal.
For Glenn Robinson?
Yeah, I mean, he's been injured the last year and a year or so, but the year before, like, he actually showed, you know, some pretty good qualities as a wing player. Like, he was able to hit a decent amount of 3-point shots. He's a decent defensive player, and he's still young. So I think getting him for $4 million is a steal.
Yeah, he's 24 this year, so it's not bad. I don't know. I don't see this team doing that much damage. I mean, who's going to be starting for them? Reggie Jackson. The 2-3 is, I'm assuming, Bullock and Stanley Johnson?
Maybe, yeah, I would assume so.
Luke Kennard?
You could see Kennard beating out Bullock in training camp, possibly, but I think for right now, you have to go with Bullock because he had a pretty good shooting season last year.
Yeah, and then the prime guys are obviously Blake and Andre Drummond, who thinks he's going to shoot threes this year.
Yeah, I don't see that happening.
Yeah, this team, Stan Van Gundy really did a number on this team, man. He left this team with, like, nothing to work with during the offseason.
Yeah, like we talked about with Charlotte, I compare this team a lot to Charlotte in that they don't really know which direction they want to go in, and they're sort of stuck in terms of the cap because they have a lot of guys that are on these massive contracts, and the parts don't really work that well, and they don't really have a lot of developing talent either. I mean, all you have is guys like, you know, Reggie Bullock, Stanley Johnson, and Kennard. And I like Kennard. I think he's going to be a pretty good rotation player in the NBA. I'm not sure if he's going to be a starter, but that's yet to be seen. And Stanley Johnson, his first couple of years, hasn't really shown that much. He needs to just figure out what kind of player that he's going to be, because he's definitely not a shooter. We've already determined that.
Yep.
So I think he should just be looking to turn himself into one of the better wing defenders in the NBA and try to get minutes that way.
Yeah, he's a really good defender. Like, he's a big body. He's really strong. In his rookie year, he obviously matched up against LeBron, started talking trash, and then LeBron just ate him up. But he was able to put on a good fight for a few games against him in the playoffs, at least. But this whole offense is really weird. Like, they're going to be solely reliant on Blake and Reggie Jackson to create. And not even just create, but literally score. Right? Like, there's no one else other than Drummond who is allegedly going to be shooting threes, but otherwise will just be catching lobs like he always does. I mean, there's not much to work with.
Yeah, the one plus that they have going for them is Reggie Jackson missed most of last year. So with him coming back in the lineup and having a competent point guard, I think that that could help them, obviously. And then you hope that the chemistry between Blake Griffin and Andre Drummond improves. They were good in stretches last year, but obviously it takes time for them to figure it out since you have a traditional 4 and 5, which most teams don't start anymore. And you have Dwayne Casey, who's actually, even though I don't like Dwayne Casey as a coach, he actually is a pretty good regular season coach. So I think if you're going to bring somebody in like him, I think that he's one of the guys, one of the coaches in the NBA that could make this work and could make this team a playoff team. But again, if that's all you're striving for, then, you know, you're not really going to be able to sell out Little Caesars Arena.
Oh, Little Caesars. Yeah, it's going to be tough for this team, man. You know me, I'm a Detroit fan, but it's going to be really tough to watch this team going forward because it's going to be a lot of mismatched offense, and their defense is going to be shaky. Like, Drummond's not that good of a defender. Blake is Blake. Reggie Jackson is a decent defender. And on the wings, like we said, you have Johnson and Bullock, who's on and off, really, as a player. Right? Like, he gets really hot, and then he just completely checks out. So hopefully Glenn Robinson will be able to spurn that defense a bit, because otherwise they're kind of shaking it.
Yeah, another problem too. I think their biggest problem is their bench. They don't really have a lot of talent off the bench. I mean, what's that?
It's bleak.
Yeah, I mean, Ish Smith is a pretty good backup point guard. Kennard, if he makes a leap, could be a solid player. But beyond that, you have a lot of question marks. Glenn Robinson, although I like him, he hasn't been consistent in being able to stay on the court and actually produce on a consistent level game to game. And then at the four, at the backup four, you have Henry Ellenson, who hasn't really played his first years in the NBA, but he's finally going to get the opportunity because they have literally nobody else because John Lewis is injured. Well,
no, my guy John Lewis is coming back.
If he comes back strong, then maybe they have a better bench than what we expect. But then you have, you know, Eric Moreland and Zaza at the five. They're not going to play much, but at the same time, you don't really have a lot of guys you can count on, especially for offense. And this is a team that struggled on offense last year and probably will continue to struggle with, you know, Griffin and Drummond being your primary guys on offense that like to post up a lot. So
yeah, it's bleak. So their over-under is 38.5. I'm going to say it's an under. I have them at 35. I'm not very confident in this team at all.
Yeah, I'm not either, but at the same time, it is the Eastern Conference. And they're one of the teams that is trying to win near like the 8 to 10 range in terms of seeds. So I'm going to go, I think I chose the under for Charlotte, right?
I think so. I don't remember, to be honest. I'm going to say you took the under.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to be the same bracket as Charlotte and trying to make the 8 seeds. So I think that Detroit is going to make the playoffs. So I'm going to go over.
Damn, they can make the playoffs and not hit 38.5. It's the East.
Yeah, true, true.
I have them in the same category as, like, yeah, Charlotte and with Cleveland.
Cleveland is not there, but that's a whole other story. Well, we've already gone over that, but
yeah.
I think you're right that they might just win like 37, 35 games and then end up making the playoffs, but I don't know. I think that if Reggie Jackson stays healthy, I think they're just good enough to possibly make a leap and make the 8 seed, which isn't much, but
I hope so. It'll be great to see Detroit in the playoffs again.
Yeah, and plus a team with that big of a front court could cause some problems for some teams in the playoffs. It's different. At least they have like a different formula for trying to win, whereas a lot of teams are trying to play the same way. They're trying to go, you know, brute strength and bully ball. So,
all right, let's take it home to the home of college basketball in Indiana. They're another team who didn't really do much this offseason. They drafted Aaron Holiday.
I wouldn't say that. I think they made a lot of improvements to their bench.
Well, they signed. They got Tyreek Evans.
Yeah, they signed Tyreek Evans. They signed McDermott, and they got O'Quinn as well. So I think they made some pretty good. Yeah, they signed O'Quinn as well.
Oh, okay. My bad, Indiana. That's my fault.
Sorry. I think that they filled a lot of the holes that they had in the playoffs, especially not being able to score enough points against the Cavs. When you have a guy like, you know, Tyreek Evans coming off your bench, that's a really good, you know, opportunity for them to improve off the bench in terms of their scoring and playmaking. And I think that they can finally experiment now with playing Oladipo or Evans at the one and playing a really big lineup with Oladipo, Evans, Bogdanovich possibly, Young and Turner, or even playing Sabonis with Turner. So they can play some really, really big lineups, or they can play small as well. So I think in getting these guys in the offseason, they can play a bunch of different ways, which is the quality that most of the better teams have in the NBA, being able to play small or big.
Yeah. Yeah, you're completely right. I totally forgot about Tyreek and Doug McDermott going there, so that's really changed my look on the team. But you're right, this team is very impressive now, especially at the three. Last year I found that it was only Bogdanovich, and then, you know, you would have Stevenson there or switch Oladipo to the three. It turned into a really small lineup, right? But now with McDermott there as a backup three, who's essentially the exact same player as Bojan Bogdanovich, that's pretty solid.
Yeah, and McDermott, even though he has his deficiencies, especially on defense, I think he shot 42% from three last year. So if he continues that, he'll probably play like 15 to 20 minutes a game and be a solid player for them.
That's exactly what they needed, right? Just a guy to come out and hit threes.
Yeah, and it seems like he'll be a good fit with Evans off the bench too. And it's going to be interesting to see what they do with Corey Joseph off the bench as well. Because if you have McDermott and Evans coming off the bench and you want to play Holiday, then somebody has to be the odd man out. And Corey Joseph hasn't had a good postseason in, well, since he's with the Spurs pretty much, because he wasn't really good for Toronto either. And, you know, he's getting up there in age. I mean, he's what, around 30 now?
He is up there in age. He's 27.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, he plays a lot older.
Oh, my God. Yeah, he's only 27. He's born in 91.
It seems like his game is falling off, though, despite him being in his prime, so that's why I thought he was older.
So he peaked when he was in San Antonio, basically.
It seemed like
surprise, though.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's just the Spurs system in that he just wasn't that good of a player. Like, he's a really good defensive player, but offensively, he's never shown, you know, a really consistent outside shot.
Yeah.
And he's never really been able to consistently create offense either. So even though he's a solid backup, I think you might want to see what you have on Holiday and see if he brings, you know, more shooting and more offensive versatility off the bench, and then you can play Joseph as, like, you know, the Lindsey Hunter role, basically being like the third guard off the bench in case you need defense.
I totally agree. This team is, there's so much potential. I'd say they're the easy four seed in the East.
Yeah, I would say either them or Milwaukee, depending on, you know, how that team works with Coach Budenholzer, but we'll get into them next. But I think the one downside with this team is in the minutes that Turner played with Sabonis, they were actually a negative net rating. So I think they have to somehow find a way for those guys to work, especially on offense. And both guys are pretty good outside shooters. Like, Turner's been able to extend his range to three. But I think that he's the key in them being able to take their, you know, take their development to the next level and winning 50-plus games and being like a true threat in the Eastern Conference in the playoffs. Because if he becomes like a solid second option that can score 15-18 points a game and be consistent, unlike last year, I think that they could really put a dent in the Eastern Conference.
I mean, they both can shoot, but they're not really consistent, right? Like, last year, Turner shot, what, 35% from three? He's not really a guy that the defense is going to be like, oh man, I gotta run out there and close out on the guy. It's okay, yeah, maybe I'll close out from time to time, but no, I'm not going to like chase him out to the perimeter every time he's taking a corner three.
Yeah, and he's actually a much better mid-range shooter as of now, so if he does extend his game to the three, then he's going to be a much different player and a much more efficient player too. But his biggest issue has been on the boards and just being, you know, tough inside, I think. In that Cleveland series, Thompson has pushed him around, and he didn't really show the competitiveness that you would expect out of a second-year guy that's hoping to reach superstardom one day. And his contract's going to be coming up next year, so he's going to be wanting, you know, a large extension, and he really has to prove it this year, I think. He really has to finally break out, which is what a lot of people are expecting of last year, but he didn't really show it all that much.
Yeah, I mean, it is a contract year, so maybe that'll get him going, hopefully.
And if not, I mean, a guy like Sabonis really stepped up in the postseason, and he has a really good all-around game, and even on defense, he wasn't that bad in the offseason, or in the postseason either, so.
No, they stuck with Sabonis down the stretch in the playoffs, too. Like, they knew where the bread and butter was with him, so he might be the guy that they use in the five spot going forward. Maybe Turner is better at the four.
You know, but he hasn't shown that yet, though. I mean, in the Cleveland side, he just has played at the four. He hasn't been good, so.
Yeah, if he can learn how to shoot a little bit better, like more consistently, he'd be a monster at the four.
I think his shooting is fine, to be honest. I think his shot actually looks really good, too. I think it's a matter of him doing the other things, like rolling to the rim, finishing strong, and getting those little in-between shots, little hook shots, which is what Sabonis has in his game.
But that's the thing, though. As a four in the modern NBA, you don't have to do that stuff as much.
No, I just see him as a five, though. I think he's played five his whole career. I don't really think that he's going to be able to switch over to four. I think if those two guys are able to hit consistently from the perimeter, I think they're interchangeable. So I think
Sabonis is much better in the paint than Turner is. Like, Turner is a good five defensively, but offensively, I don't think he has it. Like, he's good around the rim, he's got a good touch, but I think he's more effective at the mid-range now. Because he's way too soft to be inside, man. He can't bang.
No, but at the same time, you want your five to be able to spread the floor, so I think if he does, you know, increase that percentage from 35 to 37 to 38, then his game could take off.
If you want to make it work between the two of them, I think Turner has to go to the four.
Yeah, I think on offense and defense, his position probably would be the four in that point, but I don't know. I'm not sure if that pairing could actually work, but that's a good problem to have if you have two of the, you know, more talented, younger, big guys in the NBA.
You're complaining about being rich at this point.
Yeah, and I mean, if that's for a team that nobody expected to win 35 games last year, and they ended up, winning, I think, 43 or 44, and they ended up taking it to Game 7 with the Cavs, and they probably should have won that series. Oh. They actually had...
They were better than the 43. I think they were like 47 or 48 last year.
Well, there you go.
They were close to 50 already.
Yeah, if you look at the overall points scored in that series with the Cavs, they actually outscored the Cavs overall in those seven games, so they actually should have won that series. But unfortunately, it wasn't the case, but they have improved their team this year. They won 48 games last year, right?
Yeah.
So they've improved this offseason, too, so you would expect them to be over 50 games this year.
Yeah. Their over-under is 47.5. I'd take them over.
Yeah, the one thing they had going for them last year, too, is they stayed healthy pretty much the entire season. But they sort of counteracted that now with being able to have all these guys off the bench. So in case they do get injured, they have a guy like Tyreke Evans that can start whenever. And even a guy like O'Quinn that's going to be a third-string center who's a pretty good player. They just have a lot of depth. And I think that they're a shoe-in, probably, to win 50 games this year.
Did they keep Trevor Booker? No, right?
No, he's in the team, too. Actually, no. Yeah, he went to China. Sorry.
Yeah, okay. So they replaced Trevor Booker with Kyle O'Quinn. Okay. Yeah, I'd say 50 easy.
Yeah, I would say so, too. I think the one storyline that nobody really expected was that Thaddeus Young turned into their defensive anchor last year.
I mean,
nobody saw that one coming. I mean, he hasn't really shown the propensity to be able to be a defensive anchor on any team. I mean, he's been pretty good on defense throughout his career, but to be a guy that can switch out on LeBron and do a pretty good job and then shut down Kevin Love in the playoffs, like, that was impressive.
Hell of a veteran right there. No wonder they paid him.
Yeah, I mean, with them not being able to sign Aaron Gordon in the offseason, bringing back Thaddeus Young is not a bad option.
Yeah. Remember a few years ago when Thaddeus Young was like, oh, man, poor Thaddeus Young. He's always on, like, the garbage teams, even though he's a decent player, like, a good player in the league. He was on those garbage Minnesota teams. He was in Brooklyn for a while.
Obviously, yeah, Philadelphia on those treadmill teams.
Yeah. I'm glad that he's finally found a home for himself, at least for, like, a couple of years.
Yeah, and he's in the perfect role, too. It's sort of like what Iguodala went through, too, in being, like, a first or second option on a lot of, like, mediocre to crappy teams. And then he finally found his calling in Denver and then Golden State as a guy that can just be like the fourth or fifth guy in offense and be a guy that can be a playmaker and, you know, do his thing out there. And Thaddeus Young is not the same type of player, but he's found his role as like a guy who can switch multiple positions, rebound the ball, hit those little floater shots that he likes. He's finally found his calling, I guess, in Indiana.
To be fair, Andre Iguodala found his calling as a snitch for Mark Jackson. Okay, let's be real.
That's true.
Still salty about it, man. But I digress. I don't want to talk about Iguodala. Let's move on. Let's go to Wisconsin, to Milwaukee. They got Coach Bud, who, you know, came out of nowhere, right? Like, we all expected him to go to Toronto this offseason, and then hard audible at the very end. Otherwise, I mean, they drafted Dante DiVincenzo. They lost Jabari Parker.
They added a lot of shooting, though, off the bench. And they added Brooke Lopez as well for 1 year, I think, for $4 million. Like, that's a huge steal.
Who else did they bring in?
They brought in Ilya Sova for way too much money. I think he got, like, 2 or 3 years at $8 million a year.
Oh, that's right.
They brought in Pat Connaughton from Portland as well. He's also a good shooter. So.
Oh, I didn't hear about that one.
Yeah.
Connaughton's good. He's a solid player. Scrappy player.
He's a scrappy player that hits threes, so he's not going to be bad if he plays 5-10 minutes a game.
Yeah, he's deli-esque, except not dirty.
And not terrible.
Yeah, that too. I mean, this team is, the core is still the same, right? Like, it's still going to be Giannis, Middleton, Bledsoe, Henson, and McCare.
I wouldn't include those last two guys in their core, though. Honestly, I see Brooke Lopez starting this year for this team, just to give Giannis more room to operate.
I hope he does. Like, he's obviously not the same defensive player as Henson, but he can spread the floor so well. And he'll give, you're right, Giannis will have all the space in the world to go inside. And it looks like Giannis has been working on, like, more of an outside game this summer, too, right? So hopefully if he develops a jumper, like a consistent jumper or a three.
I think he has a consistent jumper now. I think his mid-range shot is actually pretty good, but...
Sorry, yeah, I meant a three. If he can develop, like, a spot-up three...
Yeah, I guess if he adds that to his game, that's great, but ultimately you want him as close to the basket as possible, or getting close to the basket as possible, so...
No, you want him to be versatile.
Oh, yeah, for sure, but I mean, like, as a guy that, you know, is going to be handling the ball pretty much at least 60 to 70% of the time for this team, I think that with him running the pick and rolls, I think that you want him to be slashing the basket again, all these guys that they brought in open.
Yeah,
that's true. This team reminds me a lot of, like... the LeBron Cavs team is before he went to Miami. And that you're just surrounding like your superstar player with a bunch of white shooters that can just open up the floor for him and hit these shots and give Giannis as much room as possible.
Are you calling Eric Bledsoe Delonte West?
Well, I guess in this scenario he would be, yeah.
Or Booby Gibson. I don't know, man.
Coach Bud, I think that I can see Bledsoe not playing as many minutes this year and then playing Brogdon at the one. Honestly, like, Coach Bud emphasizes shooting, especially with the starting lineup.
Yeah.
So I could definitely see Bledsoe maybe not being usurped by Brogdon.
Usurped.
Early in the season, but I think as the season wears on, I could see them splitting minutes and them playing Brogdon more often in closing lineups, especially just because he wants as much shooting around Giannis as possible.
That would make sense. I mean, I think the fit with Brogdon is a lot better, but Bledsoe is just a better one-on-one player, right?
Yeah, but you wanted the guy going one-on-one when you have Giannis and Middleton in that lineup? I don't think so. That's why he didn't really fit last year. He just tried to do too much.
Yeah. Remember when we thought that he was like the perfect fit when they got him?
Well, with his game, it should have been the perfect fit.
Should it have been, though? I think we should have seen better than... should have known better. Like, he's athletic, but he's... Like you said, he can't really shoot that well.
No, but what he showed in Phoenix and the Clippers before that, like, he showed that he could be one of the best, if not the best, perimeter point guard defensive player in the NBA. Like, he has all the qualities to be able to defend ones and twos at a high level, and especially in the playoffs, like, he got roasted by Terry Rozier, and throughout the regular season, he just wasn't good on defense, despite him being healthy. It didn't make any sense.
Oh, man, it was tough watching him last year. Do you think Tony Snell has anything left in the tank for this year?
I mean, he's still a young player and he can shoot, so I think he will end up starting at the two. I'm not sure how long it's going to last for, because I think a guy like, you know, even Sterling Brown, who is a young player who shot pretty good from the perimeter and does a lot of the same things as Snell, except he could become a more consistent type of player than Snell. Snell's effort and, I don't know, his ability just to show up hasn't been good throughout the course of his young career. So I could see him ending up just on the bench as a guy who doesn't get any minutes if he doesn't really step up early in the year.
He's a very lackadaisical player, right? Like he looks like he's asleep half the time, to be honest.
Yeah, and there's some games like in the playoffs against Toronto 2 years ago where he just couldn't miss. And then there's games where he just maybe gets one or two shots off and he doesn't really have an impact on defense either, where you're just like, how is this guy in the NBA?
Yeah, he's definitely a really polarizing player. I think we're all in agreement that this team is solely still reliant on Giannis to do everything, or at least to set up the offense for them this year.
I don't know about that. I mean, Middleton's been really good the last year or so, too, when he's been healthy.
But do you want him to set it up, or do you want... Like, I want him to shoot, but I don't want him to create his own shot.
I don't know. After what he showed against Boston, I think that you might want to create his own shot, because really? He was really good in the playoffs.
I see, like... yeah, I guess so. He's not going to be a guy to, like, dribble a lot and create his own shot, but he has his moves.
He's efficient, yeah, and that's what you want out of a second option with Giannis, a guy that can spot up and... You know, if he's in a pinch where he has to be like a primary ball handler, he can do that. And he's a better option right now than Bledsoe is, because Bledsoe's game has just fallen off. It seems like he brought a lot of his, bad habits from Phoenix to Milwaukee, in that if his offensive game isn't really going, then his defense falls off and his overall game falls off if he's not getting the ball that much.
So Milwaukee's over-under is 47 this year, very similar to Indiana.
Yeah, this one's a tough one.
I think they're literally at 47, maybe 48 tops.
No, I mean, if Giannis takes his game to another level and becomes the third best player in the NBA, second best player possibly in the NBA.
Wow.
If that happens, and then you surround him with these shooters and Bud's system, like, this team could take off and win 50 games.
Woo!
But on the opposite end of the spectrum, if, you know, Bledsoe continues to laze around and Tony Snell doesn't show up and... You know, Middleton's also in a contract season, so his game could take another step up as well. But I don't know. I sort of like the makeup of this team, so I'm going to go slight over.
What do you got? Like 48, 49?
Yeah, I'll take 48 games, fifth seed team.
Yeah, that's literally where I have them too. 48, 49, 5, maybe the sixth seed, depending if Washington improves a lot or has better chemistry this year, but... Somewhere around that line, 48, 49 wins, 5, 6 seed.
And again, I could see them being the fourth best team in the conference as well with Coach Budenholzer coming in. I mean, like, coaching matters. Yeah. And I think that he is one of the better coaches in the league, especially in the regular season. And I think with their offense likely taking off with, you know, Giannis and a bunch of shooters and Brook Lopez being in that lineup as well to provide, you know, veteran leadership, I think that, you know, this team could eventually become... Maybe not a contending team right away. They still need one more player, which they don't really have a lot of trade pieces to do that. But one guy we haven't really mentioned too much is Thon McCur. And if his game does take off and he's the starter at the start of the season and he actually stays consistent, like, he's a guy that could take their team to another level. He has shown, like, really good flashes in the playoffs in parts, but he hasn't shown that for whatever reason in the regular season.
He's a big game player. That's what I've established about him. At 21 years old, he's a big game player and only a big game player.
Yep, honorary Canadian too.
Honorary? Yeah, I guess so.
He played his high school ball in Toronto, I think, right?
Yeah, he played at Orangeville Prep.
There you go.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see where this team goes. I've got a lot of faith in them just because of Coach Bud. He is very proven. Obviously, he's from the Spurs school, I guess. Went to Atlanta, was really successful with them, had their 60-win team. Although this Bucks team is very different, it's promising. That's the best word I can describe for it. It's very promising. They have they have a lot of pieces that they need. Obviously, they could do a little bit better at some positions, i.e. the point guard and shooting guard positions. The 3 and 4 are very top-notch players. The 5 with Brook Lopez in there is very... Like, Brook Lopez is very underrated at this point because he's had a couple of quiet... years in LA when they were tanking, but that dude can ball. Like, he can shoot. He's a pretty, like, good defender, right? Like, he's super long. He knows how to time his blocks well. It's good rotationally.
Yeah, the one thing with him, though, is he doesn't really rebound, so I think Giannis has that covered, and Middleton's a pretty good defensive player and rebounder as well, but I think the one thing that we haven't really talked about is Budenholzer being able to implement Giannis at the five. I think that he's going to end up playing a lot of the five in closing lineups, and that's going to cause a lot of teams problems. And he's shown that he's capable of doing so in the Toronto series and last year as well. So I think if he plays the five in a lot of closing lineups and they can surround him with four shooters on the perimeter, like, they're going to be impossible to guard. So that's another way they can improve their upside overall.
That's the issue, though. They don't have four shooters. They have, like, two.
I don't know about maybe that. Three. I mean, Brogdon's been pretty consistent overall. Ilyasova is a guy that we haven't really talked about. Even though he's overpaid, like, he has shown that he's a pretty consistent shooter. And, you know, Connaughton can give him good minutes. Sterling Brown. So they have some guys that can do it. It's just a matter of, you know, them actually being able to stay consistent and hit those shots. So
you're right. Get your buckets, Milwaukee. I think that's it for this episode of the Stretch 4 podcast. That's all with the Central Division, that's for sure. Thanks for listening. You know, remember to find us on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, all the podcast network. Hit us up on Instagram and Twitter. And until next time, peace.